Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. So y'all, this is going to be one of those nifty little special edition type episodes because I have a topic that I need to talk to y'all about, and it's going to be too long to then do a bunch of zoo news and not make this a ridiculously long episode. So this was not my intention when I started writing stuff out, but there's a story we need to talk about that's just going to take too long. It just is. And so and it's too important to ignore. So we're going to talk about it for most of this episode. And then I will make a valiant effort to do a bonus Zoo News episode at some point this week. But I make no promises because, as y'all know, my life is cuckoo banana pants. And before we get to the special topic we're going to be talking about, I'm here to tell you that my life is actually going to get more cuckoo banana pants on Sunday. Because there's a new addition who's going to be joining the Rossafari clan. And if you haven't seen this yet on Instagram, you are missing out. But, you know, back in September, I lost the love of my life, my puppy Lexi. And she was a long-haired chihuahua, and we had almost 15 glorious years together. And honestly, at the time, I really wasn't sure if I would want to do like a little dog again because Lexi was my little dog. But recently, I noticed that anytime I see a little dog, I really, really want the little dog I'm seeing. I occasionally think I might kidnap them. Haven't yet. So that's good. But this was really cemented for me recently when I was actually visiting with my parents and Miles for my birthday. And we were at a park and a family had a little chihuahua and it escaped from them and took off running. And it was clear that it was like a new dog and the family didn't really know what to do. And they were calling her name. Her name was Rosie. And they were all like, Rosie, Rosie, come back, come back, come back. And they were all like freaking out. And Rosie was just like running and like, bah! Because that's what little chihuahuas do sometimes. And they were all yelling, and it was kind of like aggressive. They weren't being mean. They were just scared and letting that influence their tone and everything. And so Rosie was just kind of running away from them and in my general-ish direction. And I just got down on one knee, and I put my voice high, and I went, Rosie, come here, girl. Come here, Rosie. And her tail started going, and Rosie came over and ran to me and jumped into my arms and was giving me kisses. And I was able to do that thing that you can only do comfortably with really small dogs where I just put her kind of under my arm and walked her to her people. And in that moment, my heart felt so full and it felt something that it hasn't felt since Lexi was gone. And I pretty much knew right then that I need a little dog in my life. So fast forward a couple of days and a couple of internet searches, and I found a puppy that was named Johnny, is being renamed Buzz, who is a rescue that is currently in Texas and is on his way to me now. And Johnny is a Chihuahua mix, possibly like Beagle or something. Mix, not entirely sure. Going to do one of those DNA testing things to find out. But I am so excited for little Buzz and his little tiny feet that are going to come and hang out with me and be my new puppy. And I'm so ready for this. I'm so excited. And I just wanted to share it with y'all. So if you don't know this yet, you know, we have two dogs already, Perry and Flam. And their names are drum rudiments. If you don't know what a rudiment is, it's kind of the equivalent of a scale for a melodic instrument. It's not actually that great, but that's how people describe it a lot of times. But it's basically a thing you do with your sticks, these different kinds of combinations of hits that you can do that are like part of the language of drumming. And so Perry, who you hear me talk about a lot, our black lab, is short for paradiddle, which is a rudiment. And then there's flam, the mini Aussie, and flam is also a rudiment. And buzz is actually short for buzz roll, which is another type of rudiment, a type of drum roll. If you've ever heard the standard drum roll done at the beginning of like the Star Spangled Banner or whatever, it's usually played like a buzz roll. So not always. Boy, that was nerdy, even for this nerdy podcast. But it gets even nerdier, my friends, because their full names are based on Buddy Holly songs in which the rudiment in question is played multiple times. So Perry's full name is Peggy Sue Paradiddle, because for the entire song, Peggy Sue, the drummer, is playing paradiddles. And Flam is named Rave On Flam because the drummer frequently employs flams during that song. And Buzz's full name is That'll Be the Day Buzz Roll, because the song actually ends with the drummer just playing a big buzz roll. So those are the names of the dogs. And for the three of you that are still listening, hey, thanks for holding on. I do really want to get into the more serious topic, and it's a heck of a transition from talking about a little puppy, but I'm really excited about my little puppy. So let's get to the more serious topic, shall we? All right, so our special edition this week is a story in the San Francisco Chronicle about something I've discussed on here before in a small way, but that may actually be a much larger story than I initially believed. There is some definite drama surrounding the San Francisco Zoo right now, and it has been ongoing for quite a while. Before I get to that, however, I do want to start off right at the top here by saying that I have been to the San Francisco Zoo, and I found it to be a wonderful experience. I met many of the keeper staff, and I know I have listeners there on staff. And hi, guys. I really love you. I, in fact, love everyone I have interacted with from the keeper staff there. All of the issues I'm going to discuss in this deep dive here are 100% not the fault of the keepers. And as you will hear, many of the keepers are actually in the thick of this whole thing and on the right side of it, frankly. I love the keepers at the zoo, and I support them wholeheartedly. I also think that in general, like most of the zoo staff, is doing an incredible job. And I hate when, stories reflect negative things and don't say that. So right off the bat, yes, the staff there by and large is incredible. And so, yeah, now that I've said that, let's talk about what's happening at the zoo. So for those of you that are eagle-eared listeners, you may remember a discussion that I brought to y'all back in August about a petition that has been started on change.org with the title, quote, "Demand the Resignation of Tanya Peterson, Director of the San Francisco Zoo." It even has an exclamation point at the end of it. They're really excited about the idea, y'all. Now, the anonymously listed petition, started under the username, quote, "You Should Know," claims to have been started by a concerned citizen who is a frequent guest of the zoo and who appears to have some insider information. And it details some reasons why the author believes Tanya should be removed from her position. Now, before I get to the allegations in the petition, I want to say that I did speak to some people who are former and or current zookeepers or otherwise associated with the zoo as part of this week's prep. And while I wasn't able to find out exactly who created this petition, I do know for a fact that a lot of current and former keepers at the zoo support it and have actually shared it privately in many cases, and some are even brave enough to do it publicly, trying to drum up more signatures on it. So even if it wasn't started by someone at the zoo, and it was truly just a zoo fan, it has a lot of support amongst the staff at the zoo, in particular the keeper staff. And I mean, honestly, that's pretty concerning. So the petition makes the following accusations. It says that Tanya's leadership has been detrimental to both employees and visitors of the zoo, that Tanya underpays employees at a rate that is both low for the industry and below the poverty level, that she has created fake positions within the zoo to provide top pay for her favorites and her acquaintances, and that she planned to raise group rates at the zoo to 8 times their earlier 2023 level, burdening schools and other educational institutions in the community. So those are the accusations made in August and listed on this petition that currently has 1,102 signatures on it. And it's been out there, like I said, since August. And but now there's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle that is making more stuff come to light. And so the article is entitled "A Grizzly Bear Chase: A Dead Penguin. Behind the Scenes, the San Francisco Zoo is in Turmoil Over Safety." And digging into the article, the first shocking thing is that a grizzly bear named Kiona escaped holding last year, actually entering a keeper space while a keeper was inhabiting it. The keeper in question had locked the door between the bear and human, but the door had an issue in which you could lock the lock even if the door wasn't closed. So the lock's locked, but the door is not closed. And that's what happened to this keeper. Other keepers in the area were able to use treats to coax Kiona out of the keeper area and into one of her secure outdoor areas. And in the end, no one was harmed. According to whistleblowers, the incident was apparently not reported to the USDA or AZA as is required. But the USDA showed up to investigate the incident after a whistleblower went to them and raised concerns. The incident was not made public knowledge until the Chronicle started its investigation and published this thing this week. Now, I'm not going to rehash my last special edition about what happens with like PR people when things go wrong at a zoo. But if nothing else, let this cautionary tale be another reminder to the zoo PR people listening that just because something doesn't hit the press right away doesn't mean it won't, as we discussed in that episode. We had multiple examples of that, in fact. Be it disgruntled employees or things like FOIA requests, this information is available if people look enough. And people are, in fact, looking. But I digress. The story about the bear in and of itself, while dramatic and scary, it is part of the risk of working at a zoo around dangerous carnivores. The door that could be locked without being closed seems like an obvious safety hazard, but carnivore keepers understand theirs is an inherently dangerous job. But this was just one of several safety hazards the Chronicle investigation uncovered, some of which had been disclosed publicly and some of which had not. One of these instances was the death by crushing of a baby gorilla in 2014, for which the zoo was cited and fined by the USDA. Now, in that instance, a young gorilla ran under an electric gate as it was being closed after the troop moved in for the night. And I need to stress that I feel so terrible for the keeper who was on duty when that happened. There was an emergency stop button installed, but the keeper failed to realize what was happening and press it in time. And again, that is the kind of thing that can happen in a career in the zoo field, and that is both scary and understood to be part of the gig. But what's unique about this incident is that five zookeepers who worked directly with primates at the zoo came out and said that safety in the building was an issue because of a flawed layout, technical issues with the doors, and inadequate staffing. As a matter of fact, an external gorilla expert who was brought in to examine the area in the wake of the death confirmed that someone working the gates and the emergency stop button would not have the ability to see all of the doors simultaneously or the enclosures behind them, which is what would be necessary to prevent a death of this type. But when asked about it, Director Tanya Peterson put the blame on the keeper for breaching protocol by not keeping her hand directly on the emergency stop button. And while that may have also contributed to the death, you want to do things the right way, no doubt, both keeper staff and an external expert agreed it was not the only issue that led to that unfortunate passing. And honestly, before I go into some of these other examples here, I have to say, throwing your employee under the bus is just bad leadership. You know, I get that in private and when answering to your higher-ups, you might have to, you know, be honest, but to just publicly blame a keeper for something, especially the death of an animal, nah, that's not okay. That's really, really not okay. I mean, when I'm like music directing and something goes wrong on stage, I take the blame. If anybody asks, if there are questions, I say, oh yeah, yeah, no, I know. I did something weird, whatever. Whatever happened, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, my guitarist sucked tonight. And that's a much lower pressure gig than, you know, zookeeping. It's just not cool to hear that and to see that. Like, you got to read the room if you're in a leadership position. You just got to. But yeah, that wasn't even the only incident with a gorilla at the zoo. As in 2018, a gorilla named Hassani started to open a hydraulic door, getting it open several inches before keepers were able to distract him and move him to a safer space. The door had malfunctioned, which again, can happen, but this was actually the third time the door had malfunctioned around the time of the incident. Fortunately, the first two times were not malfunctions that were taken advantage of by any gorillas. But this is a door that opens to a space where keepers often worked, and if Hassani had gotten through into that space at a time a keeper was there, it very well could have been a disaster. It's not just that incident almost happened. It's that it was an incident caused by a door that was already known to malfunction with a dangerous animal behind it. This incident, by the way, had also not been reported to the public until the Chronicle article. And again, I'm not saying that zoos always have to, you know, share every time something goes wrong. See my previous special edition for my much deeper take on that. But it's just worth mentioning as these stories pile up. For instance, the Chronicle also discovered an unreported death of a young penguin named Handy Harry last year. He was struck by a door of the type that drops down, known as a guillotine door. Now, the penguins were being kept in a facility that was designed for otters, and the heavy door fell down, like it malfunctioned and fell down, crushing Harry. And keepers felt that the door system was challenging to use, and I also personally assume they were not as comfortable with the system as they were with the systems in the, you know, penguin habitat that they actually work in regularly. So while I do, again, want to point out that accidents happen, it seems like these keepers were not being set up for success, that leadership was not giving them what they need. As a matter of fact, keeper staff had complained to management that the doors were not easy to use, but changes were not made. And that led directly to the death of a penguin, according to multiple sources. And really, it's that disconnect that seems to be the real problem at the zoo. According to the Chronicle, the change.org petition, and the staff I had the opportunity to speak to about the zoo, there is just a huge disconnect between the keeper staff and the upper management, in particular, Director Tanya Peterson. Now, along with the accusations put forth in the petition, multiple keepers have resigned specifically because of what they say is upper management's disregard of keeper concerns. Since 2020, 9 of the 12 curators at the zoo have resigned, with an additional one retiring. Now, keep in mind, curator positions are often the ones where people are unlikely to leave. They are well-paid compared to other zookeeping jobs. They're management positions, and they're ones that people tend to, like, really work hard to get into and then stick around for a long time. And in roughly the same time period that 10 of the 12 curators left, zookeeping staff was reduced by almost 20%, which led to keepers taking on additional tasks, including new areas and new animals that they were less familiar with, all while working with new, less experienced curators. And yeah, I mean, okay, turnover is always an issue in the zoo field, but it is worth noting that numerous former employees left because of the disconnect with upper management. They specifically said that is the reason they left. And yes, there are always people who are disgruntled about management. Many of the concerns surrounding the disconnect, though, came from keepers who believed their concerns were affecting the welfare of animals. It wasn't just simple HR-type issues or the standard concerns found in this industry, like the pay, which is always below what keepers deserve. Like, when I first read that in the petition, I was like, on one hand, I totally hear you, and San Francisco is a ridiculously expensive place to live. But on the other hand, like, it shouldn't be this way. But welcome to the zoo field, y'all. Like, I hate that it's that way. I literally get mad when my close keeper friends and I are, like, texting, and I'm like, hey, what are you up to? And they're like, going to my other job so I can afford to live my life. And I'm like, that sucks. But yeah, it just there were many other issues here, you know, and like I said, it goes back to animal welfare for a lot of this. One example, along with the deaths already mentioned, is that former staff claim that when a Pattis monkey developed a debilitating tumor on its face, animal care staff decided it was time to euthanize the animal. But Director Peterson, who has no animal care experience, by the way, disagreed, keeping the monkey alive for an additional week before allowing the euthanasia to occur, causing an additional week of pain and suffering for the animal. Now, I will say, Peterson claimed that there had been no delay at the time, but the USDA did come in and find 2 instances of the zoo being out of compliance while investigating the incident, with the report specifically stating that zoo veterinarians, quote, did not have the adequate authority to make animal welfare decisions regarding humane euthanasia of animals. I mean, that seems like an authority the vets should have to me, don't you think? It's not great that was in, like, a USDA report. And, of course, you know, we've talked about the welfare stuff, but the HR-type issues, they're also a thing. Recently, both the director's daughter and fiancé were brought into the zoo in paid positions, which, honestly, is a pretty bad look whether they were earned or not, especially given the other accusations against Peterson, that whole, like, creating positions thing and only paying her friends a lot of money thing. As a matter of fact, in 2014, during union contract negotiations, because the zoo is unionized, which is pretty cool, members of the staff cast a vote of no confidence in Peterson, saying she promoted a punitive/retaliatory culture and that she failed to provide proper oversight and senior management accountability on safety issues. And keep in mind, this is a vote that happened before many of the safety-related deaths and scares and resignations I've talked about on here so far. And, you know, I just don't understand how this kind of thing keeps happening at zoos, and there just isn't any accountability when it comes to director issues. And when I say it keeps happening, I mean, let me be clear, it is a rare thing. But in this situation, and in the situation I've detailed in previous Zoo News episodes, talking about what was going on with the director of the Henry Vilas Zoo, which cost the AZA seven figures, and there was a lawsuit and all that crazy stuff. It just, these two examples just make me so frustrated and honestly, just so sad. You know, I have had the incredible privilege of walking around multiple zoos with their directors for episodes of the podcast or just interviewing other ones. And I've even gotten to experience the whole walk around thing with a few of them when we weren't even recording. They were just like helping me out and taking me around their zoo. And in every instance, I have seen incredible leaders who are really in tune with their staff and really in love with their animals. And before any cynics amongst you think, well, yeah, it's easy to show that for the press, the way I can actually see it is in the way the staff react to the directors, often without even knowing who I am or why I'm there. I can also hear it in the way the directors talk about their staff and the way they gush about their animals, knowing almost as much about the individuals as any of the keepers do. And it's not just at the small zoos where I see this. Thane Maynard is the director of the Cincinnati Zoo, and keepers, by and large, love him. I've heard so many of them praise Thane, always calling him by his first name and recounting personal experiences they've had with him, times he's chipped in, etc. And as I've mentioned before, I know there will always be disgruntled employees at any job. And I do have to say, the board of the San Francisco Zoo and others in upper management do actually sing their director's praises, and they call the accusations being made by over 20 current and former employees unfounded and based on outdated information. And maybe, possibly, I guess that could be true. But in having these accusations made in multiple public forums and in having keepers in private encouraging people to sign the petition and adding additional complaints to the pile, and for it to be bad enough for the union to have had a vote of no confidence in the director, that is all evidence of someone who is not leading, or at the very least, not leading well. When a leader loses the people they are supposed to lead, they either have to work hard to get them back, or they have to move on, or be moved on from. This is just such a crazy laundry list of accusations made against the director of the San Francisco Zoo. I just can't imagine they are all made up. Occam's razor shreds that theory to bits. Especially when there is documentation about many of the incidents. You know, I'm really, really passionate about leadership. You hear it talked about on here a lot, and I also frequently have leadership roles on the tours and gigs that I do, and I know how much of an impact a good leader can make on the staff of an organization. In fact, I know how much of an impact a good leader can make on a staff that works in a unique field that is underpaid compared to expertise, but is a passion-driven field, which obviously means a unique and challenging set of circumstances faced by said leadership team. I've seen it in my career. I've had the opportunity to be that good leader in my career, and I've taken the time to learn how to be a good leader. And you know I always get excited to discuss this stuff when I talk to other leaders who are passionate about it, like Danny Poirier-Larsen, who y'all have heard me discuss leadership with repeatedly. I have not yet had the pleasure to interview Al Zone, who is the executive director at Elmwood Park Zoo. But I've seen him walking around the zoo dozens of times, and the man just exudes leadership. Keepers light up when he's there. He talks to them and to guests, and you just see smiles grow. And, you know, when the zoo flooded and I was volunteering, you know, helping with the cleanup, he was right there, sleeves rolled up, getting his hands dirty. I've actually seen him do that kind of thing a bunch of times. And that's what every zoo and every zookeeper deserves from their leadership. Not an environment that feels punitive and that is filled with nepotism. This career's hard enough, y'all. The staff at the San Francisco Zoo deserve better than what they're getting right now. Either Director Peterson needs to fix the culture at the zoo, starting with herself, or she needs to not be a part of it. And, you know, now that this is out there in the public and, like, in a major newspaper, it's not going away. The Chronicle has committed to continuing to report on future issues at the zoo and to be a place that whistleblowers can go to ensure that whatever is happening at the zoo will be made public knowledge. And all of this represents yet another example of why I think transparency is so dang important in this industry and why I'm here to help provide it. As I mentioned at the top of this, I have been to the San Francisco Zoo and had a wonderful time there, despite the fact that some keepers who knew me did share their concerns privately at that time. I actually believe, with my current gigging schedule looking like it does, that I will be back at the San Francisco Zoo this summer. Assuming they don't, you know, ban me from going there because of this episode. Maybe I have to get, like, a fake mustache and glasses. Oh, crap, I already have a mustache and glasses. I don't know. Anyway, but all joking aside, I would love, love, love to feature the incredible keepers and animals there on my podcast. I would love to be a part of them being more transparent, and maybe this lights a fire under their butts and they start to look for that. And maybe I can help with that this summer. I would love that. I'll reach out to them again, as I did the last time I was there. But I never heard back from them last time, and I was actually told by many of the keepers there when I did visit that, yeah, they were not surprised and that it was pretty unlikely that this would be a zoo that would want to open up to an external party and share what's going on. And I'm kind of getting the vibe that that's still the attitude there. So I hope not. I really, really, really hope not. We shall see. But I would love, if any of y'all are listening from the zoo, and I know some of you are, I would love to help to share the amazing work that is done there, because regardless of what is going on with leadership, the keeper staff there is amazing. The stories there deserve to be told, and the animals are incredible. So, like, San Fran Zoo, let's turn this ship around, and I am here to help 100%. Think about it. All right. So, like I said, when I started this week, I was not planning on a special edition, but that just seemed like a really important thing to talk about and to really go into detail about. So there it is. I hope you all enjoyed it. My special editions have gotten some props before, so I hope this is also a very proppy one. But hey, let me say thank you quick to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Larshank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And if you sent me a story this week, it's still in consideration for either a bonus episode this week or at the very least next week. And no matter what, I will say all of your names at the end of the next normal episode, because I appreciate y'all contributing so much. I'm here for y'all. I want to balance these big deep issues with my normal Zoo Newsy stuff, but y'all are the fans. So let me know what you think. Let me know if you miss the normal stuff when I do this. Let me know if you think these are important. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I want to give y'all what y'all want while also honoring my own vision for this podcast. But even more importantly, I want y'all to remember that the words Newsy Credits backwards are Stider Kuswin.
The Rossafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.